Good morning, and thanks for joining us today for the release of the Institute of Medicine's new report, Combating Tobacco Use in Military and Veteran Populations. I'm Sarah Free from the News Office at the National Academies, and with us today we have two members of the committee that wrote the report. Committee Chair Stuart Bondurant, Professor of Medicine and Dean Emeritus at the School of Medicine at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and Kenneth Kaiser, former Undersecretary for Health in the Department of Veterans Affairs and former Director of the California Department of Health Services, where he was one of the architects of California's tobacco control program. After a presentation from the committee members, we'll open the floor to your questions. And if you have a question at that time, we'd ask you to please step to the microphone and state your name and affiliation before asking your question. And those listening to the webcast can submit a question at any time. And now I'll turn things over to Dr. Bondurant.
Thank you, sir. First of all, thank you all for coming.
Sir, can you please move to the microphone?
Thank you all for coming. Is that better? We appreciate very much your interest. And tobacco, as you know, is the number one preventable cause of death in the United States today, and it extracts a significant toll on the readiness and effectiveness of our military forces and considerable expense from the Veterans Administration in the form of health care costs of our veterans. The Defense Department and the Veterans Administration asked the Institute of Medicine to undertake a study of what it could do to improve the long-standing and substantial programs of tobacco control that those two federal agencies have had. Is there echo in the, do I hear echo?
Yeah, I need you to really pull the microphone to you so I don't have to try to adjust what the distance.
You want me to pull it to me?
Yes.
Thank you. Closer? Okay.
You're good.
Got it? Yes, okay. Well, my point was just that the costs of tobacco to the military in terms of readiness and compromise of the physical condition of the forces and health costs in the military services and to the Veterans Administration in terms of health costs of veterans are both substantial, and that was the basis for the request of the two agencies to the Institute of Medicine to undertake this study. It needs to be noted that both agencies have had long-standing records of major programs to control tobacco use. Those programs have not been entirely successful, and the spirit of the request for the committee's report was one of how can we do a better job in controlling the use of tobacco. To anticipate the major recommendations of the committee after careful consideration are, first of all, that the Defense Department begin immediately to plan to develop a tobacco-free military system, that the conservatively analyze the benefits of creating a tobacco-free military phased in over some time. Could be achieved without disruption sufficient to offset the advantages of undertaking that. The committee determined that tobacco actually impairs military readiness, and that is one of the reasons for the recommendation of the committee that the military move to develop a tobacco-free environment. And the third key recommendation of the committee, which is a broad one, is based on the observation that many factors influence the prevalence of the use of tobacco. Genetic factors, psychological factors, environmental factors of various kinds, cues, behavior of friends and colleagues. But many factors influence the use of tobacco, and therefore To be effective in controlling the use of tobacco, a program needs to be one that addresses many different factors. In short, a comprehensive program that is coordinated and well-managed needs to be developed, and that is the third key component of the committee's recommendation. With that introduction, let me go through some of the more detailed background of the report, and I will move pretty quickly through this, but we'll be happy to answer any questions that any of you may have at any point along the way. The next slide is simply a list of the committee, and what I would just observe is that these are people chosen by the Institute of Medicine to be leading experts in the specific fields that are required to understand and mount evidence-based tobacco control programs, and all of the pertinent fields are covered in this slide, and we can say more about that if anyone wants to. Our charge, as given to us by the Defense Department and the Veterans Administration, is cited on this slide, and you can see the individual items. I won't read them all, but in general, they are to identify policies and practices that could be improved within both the DOD and the VA to reduce the initiation of tobacco use, to reinforce the programs of cessation, to limit the availability of tobacco, and in every other way that tobacco control has been shown to work on the basis of evidence, to put those things into effect. And the next to last one, is to design programs for some of the specific kinds of problems, such as the fact that the Veterans Administration has to deal with the simultaneous occurrence of post-traumatic stress problems, and tobacco utilization, and those two are known to be associated in a high level and need special kinds of attention. So the committee gave special attention to the particular kinds of needs that the population in the military and in the VA have. And the final part of the charge is to recommend research approaches for reducing the consumption of tobacco. The scope of the problem is summarized here. It's pertinent that the national average of smoking in the United States as a whole is 19.8% of the population of the country smokes. As you see, 22% of veterans smoke and 32% of military personnel today smoke, so that the prevalence of smoking is significantly higher in both veterans and in the military. And 15% of the military use smokeless tobacco, and that percent is thought to be increasing over time. I mentioned earlier, but I'd emphasize that tobacco use impairs military readiness. The short-term health effects of tobacco use are well known: the increased incidence of respiratory and other disease, increased absenteeism for a whole variety of causes, but one that's not as widely recognized is delayed wound healing is an important one in the context of this report. There are, of course, in addition, long-term health effects, which are also familiar, the cardiovascular effects, which are prevalent and partly responsible for the largest single cause of death in the country, as well as the many different kinds of cancer that have been shown to be related. Exposure to secondhand smoke is now clearly seen to be a much more serious problem than earlier because smoke lingers, the secondhand smoke lingers for as long as years after a room is used as a smoking room and the contents of the smoke settle out. The goal of the committee was seen in two terms. One is short-term, to address the short-term use of tobacco, and in the long-term, the committee concluded that the goal should be to have tobacco-free VA facilities and to achieve a tobacco-free DOD and armed services as the ultimate goal that we would recommend to the two agencies. I mentioned the need earlier for a comprehensive tobacco control program, and this slide simply lists the elements of a comprehensive tobacco control program, all of which have to be present if the program is to be maximally effective. And I would just emphasize that that includes the strategic plan. It notably includes strong and forceful and creative leadership from the top of the organization through all levels of the organization need to be committed and leading in the commitment to, in implementing the commitment to control the tobacco use. The final thing that I would just call special attention to is surveillance and evaluation. One needs to measure the consequences of the interventions, the consequences of the parts, each part of the program, and to get their effectiveness in order to evaluate that and to reallocate resources or strengthen the parts that aren't working or redesign them or do something. There needs to be a closed control loop for the operation of an effective program. The Veterans Administration has a long record of efforts to control tobacco use, and it has, in the VA, already many components in place of a comprehensive program, and they are working. I won't go through the list because you can read through faster than I, and I think they are pretty clearly self-explanatory. DOD also has many program components in place, and some of these are the same. DOD did develop a prevention strategic plan in 1999 and has been in the process of implementing that plan. It has many tobacco restrictions in place, and it has made many tobacco cessation interventions. The culture of tobacco use in the military, however, remains to be a strong factor in the judgment of many experts in sustaining the traditions of smoking in the military. We all walked by the cartoon of Ernie Pyle, I assume many of you saw by the door here with his the World War II correspondent with his helmet on and the cigarette in his mouth, in the classic tobacco relationship that is perceived as a cultural characteristic of the military environment. And that is one of the important barriers to effective control of tobacco control in DOD. The VA cannot go entirely smoke-free because of legislative requirements to maintain smoking rooms on the VA, on individual VA campuses, and that is a problem that needs to be considered. The VA programs, there's a wide variation in the effectiveness of programs in different VA installations. And so rather than having a coherent, comprehensive program where each VA installation has equivalent or comparable kinds of capabilities, There's wide variation across the VA, and there's not a comprehensive program in that sense. The tobacco cessation has not received highly visible leadership from highly visible support from senior leadership, and there has not been systematic evaluation of the effectiveness of different parts of the program. DOD continues to sell tobacco at discount rates, and tobacco is perceived by many as part of the culture, as I said a moment ago. And the rules and regulations that are present within many of the military branches are not consistently enforced. There are some barriers, some serious barriers to care for individual veterans. For example, the counseling that is offered as part of the tobacco control program is often not offered at times that are convenient or even possible for veterans. There are difficulties in getting prescriptions, and this differs on different veterans' facilities, but difficulties in getting prescriptions for tobacco cessation medications. One of the big concerns is the fact that, unlike the military services, where tobacco cessation programs can be taken by both the husband and wife, by spouses, in the Veterans Administration, only the veteran is eligible for that program. And that means that when a veteran decides that he or she wants to quit and signs for a program, the spouse, who is likely to be a smoker also, continues to smoke, and that reduces the likelihood of success of the program. One of the recommendations of the committee is that attention be given to what could be done to improve, to make it possible for the spouses in the VA wonder what that's.
You might need to use the master class.
Thank you. There are institutional level barriers to the program in the VA which need attention also. This includes, as I mentioned earlier, the requirement for smoking shelters at medical care facilities. The Veterans Administration health care facilities are maybe the only ones in the country, only health care facilities in the country that still have required smoking on site. As I'm sure many of you know, many hospitals, and I think most now, are smoke free. Neither the VA nor the DOD have sufficient staff trained in tobacco cessation interventions to provide the services that are needed by their people, and there has been no studies or few studies of the effectiveness of tobacco cessation interventions to serve as a basis for managing the program more effectively. In the military, there are also barriers which include some of the same ones that are in the that were listed for the Veterans Administration, and I would just call your attention to the next to last one. The perception that tobacco use is acceptable is part of the sort of the cultural set of the military. There are institutional barriers in the Defense Department, which include the fact that congressional and tobacco industry influence on the tobacco policies of the several branches of the service are clearly present. Tobacco control has not been perceived as a high priority for DOD leadership, Tobacco use is not considered, has not been considered to impact readiness. The committee's judgment is to the contrary of that, and the discounted prices for tobacco products are an encouragement. There are a number, the committee recommends a number of ways to overcome these barriers. The first is the national quit line, better training, training for more of the existing personnel, not more personnel, but training, more training for the existing personnel, eliminating the sale of tobacco products on military installations, and eliminating the tobacco use areas. And to overcome the barriers in the VA, the again, the committee recommends the creation of a national quit line, the training of health care providers, including spouses in the tobacco cessation programs, and closing the smoking shelters. Well, the bottom line of all this is that the committee's recommendation is that both the Department of Defense and the Veterans Administration set a date certain for being tobacco-free and a timeline with benchmarks along the way for reaching that tobacco-free condition. This will, in the committee's judgment, require closing the pipeline of tobacco users entering the military in a phased approach. And the committee would recommend, for example, that that begin with the service academies, Annapolis, West Point, the Air Force Academy, and that those institutions be the first to go tobacco-free with respect to their applicants, in respect to their matriculants who come into the academies. That thereafter the ROTCs, which are other sources of officers, become smoke-free. And that for enlisted personnel, it is the true currently in all branches of the service that basic training is a smoke-free period in all branches of the service. The committee recommends that advanced training be also made a smoke-free period as a next step, as an initial step. But that ultimately the enlisted personnel also be understand prior as a condition of enlistment that they would be enlisting in a tobacco-free organization. The other recommendations are those that are there: stop selling tobacco products on military installation. Very importantly, the committee recommends that the effectiveness of all of these programs be carefully assessed on a regular, recurring basis and publicly reported, that there be coordination between the VA and the DOD in these matters. This is intended only to say again that the committee believes that there is evidence from many programs that strong and dedicated leadership is an essential part of a successful program. The final slide lists some of the items on the research agenda. These include, for example, the assessment projects, the effective prevention of the use of smokeless tobacco. There's very little work been done to understand how to control the use of smokeless tobacco. The evaluations that I've mentioned before. And finally, the need to study and develop alternatives to tobacco to relieve the stress and boredom during deployments, which are thought to be the reason that the tobacco consumption goes up during deployments. to seek less harmful ways to deal with the, with those stress and boredom. That's the finishes the introductory remarks that I had planned to make. Let me ask Dr. Kaiser if he would like to add, elaborate or add or complement any of those remarks.
Jim? Thank you, Dr. Bondrant. Good morning. Thanks for your interest in being here. I'm mindful of the clock, so I will be quite brief. I would just underscore that, if I compete with the vacuum cleaner, this has been a momentous week for tobacco control. It began with on Monday with the President signing legislation to authorize the Food and Drug Administration to regulate and have better control over tobacco products. We capped the week on Friday with releasing this report, which provides a roadmap for how the armed forces might better achieve their stated goal of becoming tobacco-free. I think just to underscore some of the points that have already been made, I think perhaps one of the most, if not the most important, recommendation of the committee is that the Department of Defense set a date certain by which the armed forces will be tobacco-free, and we have given them or outlined several steps that could be taken to help them achieve this, or to assist their efforts, their ongoing efforts to achieve this important goal. There are varying opinions about how long it might take for the armed forces to become truly tobacco-free, and I think the probably majority of opinions believe that this could be with effective leadership and utilization of the measures and actions outlined in the committee's report, that this could be achieved in 5 to 10 years. It may take a bit longer, but certainly that's the horizon that I think the committee was thinking about. It clearly will take some time. It will take a multifaceted approach, as Dr. Bondurant has talked about. But certainly eliminating the sale of tobacco products on military bases, providing smoke-free housing for military personnel, establishing a national quit line, including tobacco control efforts as a factor in officer fitness reports and consideration for promotion, and developing both veteran and military-specific comprehensive national tobacco control programs would be very important steps that would take us a long way down this road of creating both a more fit armed forces and reducing the cost of health care associated with tobacco-related diseases for both the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Department of Defense. Just two clarifying points. There may be some misimpression about the Department of Veterans Affairs interest and effort to create tobacco free facilities. This has been a ongoing battle and for now almost 20 years, and the VA hospitals and VA medical facilities are the only healthcare facilities in the country that are required by federal law to maintain smoke-free or smoking sites for both patients and staff. And there have been repeated and ongoing attempts to try to change that federal law, and the committee certainly would like to reinforce the efforts of the department to change this clearly out-of-date and anachronistic federal law. The last point I would make is that while reference has been made to Veterans Administration, that's a frequent reference. The committee is well aware that the Veterans Administration has not existed for over 20 years, and that there's a cabinet-level Department of Veterans Affairs that is responsible for veterans programs today. With that, I think we can turn the microphone open to the group.
Sarah comes back to the podium.
Come back, and I'd just like to invite you, if you have any questions, to please step to one of the microphones and ask them now. And please state your name and affiliation.
Yeah, Dennis Crowley from United News and Information. First question is, can military facilities involve local communities in their efforts? Because so many, I grew up Air Force, and the majority of the people on the base lived off base because of lack of base housing, depending upon the Air Force base, and involved churches, even pastors in the local community to say, hey, smoking is not good, it's bad for your health. And second of all, do the chaplains on the bases play any role at all in counseling individuals as to what they could do from a psychological or a spiritual point of view to quit smoking?
Well, I would go beyond what you said in saying that not only can they work and partner with their local communities, i.e. the military bases and facilities can work with the local communities, but they in fact should. This should be a partnership. I think the problem, and one of the reasons why we're or the committee is calling for veteran and military specific quit lines and some other things, is that often the community and, for example, some of the quit lines that currently exist don't appreciate the particular circumstances and issues that military personnel or veterans have, or likewise they may not recognize some of the danger signs or red flags that may go about the need for dealing with PTSD or other issues. And so it's not that they're not doing a good job, they're just special and additional things that would be important in dealing with veterans and military personnel, and therefore there should be dedicated resources for that. As far as the role of the chaplains, absolutely. There's a role for them in lots of ways in people's lives, and certainly this is one way where they could be perhaps more aggressive than they've been in the past as well.
Let me just add that the committee did hear from witnesses who described interactions of specific bases in the military with community-based anti-smoking enterprises of various kinds, drawing on the resources of those. So there are already some examples of reaching across of just the kind that you are suggesting. And the people were enthusiastic and proud of these and were spreading the word among other to other bases and so on. And so I do think that that is on a limited scale already underway. And another dimension of it is that the large voluntary health organizations such as the American Cancer Society and the American Heart Association often have local entities that are involved in this, and they too have been reaching, and the military has drawn on those organizations as well to reinforce their anti-smoking campaigns on an individual basis. From the committee's point of view, I think it would be fair to say that one of our observations was that there's unevenness in this. It's not a global military-wide or service-wide enterprise. These things are happening in isolation on individual basis. My own judgment is exactly the same as Dr. Kaiser's with respect to the chaplains and their role in this. I agree and that is an important role.
I'm Peggy Eastman with Oncology Times, and I have a couple of questions. First of all, did you come up with any cost estimate of what smoking costs the military, some sort of overall cost estimate? Are we talking millions, billions, higher than billion, trillion?
At least hundreds of billions.
Hundreds of millions.
I beg your pardon?
Hundreds of millions, not hundreds of billions.
Hundreds of B, hundreds of mil.
Well, the I think you can hear that the answer is that, no one is entirely satisfied with any algorithm that I know of for calculating the total costs of tobacco to the services with a precision that's plus or minus even 20%. There are just so many variables that you can argue, say, for example, consider cardiovascular disease, which is a big, a huge source of cost to the Veterans Administration, to the country. How much of cardiovascular disease, the cost of cardiovascular disease should be attributed to tobacco use, and there are estimates of this, but they're very crude and rough estimates, and they're not. So I would say that the committee wrestled with the question, was frustrated and unable to reach a definitive number. Is that a fair?
Yeah, I think, well, it would be safe and accurate to say that this, that tobacco costs taxpayers through the health care programs of both VA and the Department of Defense many billions of dollars each year.
Billions.
Now, how you define many is more variable, but we're not talking about a few million or even a few hundred million. We are talking about billions of dollars. And clearly, insofar as the disproportionate rise of health care costs and the impact of health care costs on the military budget, this is a very significant, or reducing tobacco use in the long term could be a very significant element in reducing health care costs for both the military and the VA and in turn taxpayers.
The second question has to do with the new powers given to the FDA to regulate tobacco. How will that, if at all, play into this effort to reduce the tobacco problem in the military? Will that help? Should.
You want to keep going, and then I'll pick up the second.
Well, it's an excellent question. It's one that we have tried to get some sense of, recognizing the legislation was just signed a few days ago, and that many people are still trying to interpret what it actually says. And I think the short answer is that it will probably have some effect, but that's indeterminate at the moment. And it will depend not only on what the law says, but how it is interpreted, what further implementing regulations might be put in place, how the law may be modified over time, because I think we're all aware that legislation is often modified after an initial bill is acted or is enacted. So there's a lot of variables, but I think that we would view it as a friendly and positive development in this regard.
I would, if I may just add, make it say that even more, I would say it would be a supportive development to be even stronger, and would cite a couple of specific ways in which I think that's true. There will be, first of all, the composition of some products will have to be revealed. And the criteria for allowing claims with respect to health will be controlled more tightly than they have previously. And that has to reinforce that capacity to do that, will reinforce, I think, the efforts that we're describing here. A second thing that in the long run will, I think, be quite important is that the law is focused to a considerable extent on the approval of new tobacco products or new products. And the industry is, of course, now has a number of new products in the pipeline, and many expect that there will be a number of new ones cranked out. Under this law, the Defense Department and the VA can see what's coming in terms of new products and can develop control programs that are based on the scientific data as terms of the threat and the nature of the new products. So I would say those are two ways in which this would be a supportive, the law will be supportive of this program.
Okay, this is absolutely my last question. As we know, the Commander-in-Chief, the President, has spoken openly about his own struggle with tobacco control. And this could be possibly a positive thing in helping young servicemen and women quit, since he has talked about his own struggle and he personally wants to be tobacco free. So how do you all see that personal struggle of our President playing into these efforts?
Well, I think it reflects the fact that these are real human problems, and that tobacco is a very addicting product for anyone. I think it's frankly highly commendable that he's acknowledged his struggle, and I think that will be of assistance, and he has the opportunity to provide great leadership for millions of Americans here. And I think that one of the things that the committee makes very clear in its report and has stated this morning is the essentiality of leadership in this issue. And certainly as Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces, I can't think of a better place where such leadership would start. And as a sidebar, as a still licensed physician who has prescribing authority, if he should need a prescription, I'll be happy to help him out.
As a practicing physician, would only add to that, that I would say that the question is not whether he will stop, but when he will stop. I think that his prognosis in terms of succeeding in his efforts is quite good for a number of reasons.
The point I would just take this opportunity, since no one's had the mic, is that certainly his wife may be very helpful in this regard, and that kind of segues to one of the recommendations that perhaps needs further emphasis here is the importance, certainly among the veteran population, of being able to provide tobacco control services for spouses of smokers. This is a family problem. It's a long-term problem, and it's one in which if you may be very effectively treated, have whatever aids you might need, but if you go home to a smoke-filled house, it sets things back in a big way, and it is a significant deficiency in the VA's ability to deal with this problem that it can't provide for family members as well. Now, the Department of Defense can do that. There's a difference here between the two. I would just also say that this is not unlike other situations or other conditions that VA is dealing with, whether it's post-traumatic stress disorder or a number of other things, where it's become clear that these aren't individual problems, but these are family longitudinal problems that require a concerted effort. And so, again, I would hope that the legislative or legal barriers to more effective treatment and more effectively addressing these important public health problems could be remedied by the appropriate legislative bodies.
Are there any more questions? If there are no more questions, then that concludes our briefing. And I'd like to thank you for joining us and just remind you that the full text of the report is available online at nationalacademies.org, and an audio file of this briefing will be posted there later today, along with the PowerPoint presentation. Thank you.